everyone. I'm Gary Knoll, and this is the Progressive Commentary Hour. Today, the topic is canceling those who question, no matter what the veracity, legitimacy, or scientific backing, any of the official vaccine narratives, not just COVID, any vaccine, as if we've never had a bad vaccine, as if every single vaccine is safe and effective, proven by double-blind, placebo-controlled studies that would be a gold standard by anyone's measurement. We're told that those who do suffer from any adverse effects, well, first of all, probably wasn't the vaccine. Even if in the doctor's office after receiving the vaccine, they have an anaphylactic episode, it certainly wasn't the vaccine. What do we make of a country that institutionally and systemically denies cause and effect? I've had a long career, 55 years, as a consumer activist in the front lines fighting these issues. In my entire career, I have never once seen the galvanizing of the orthodox pro-vaccine establishment physicians and scientists challenging, at the risk of their own careers and reputations, many of the official narrative points by Anthony Fauci, the World Health Organization. In fact, one group just signed 26 names of outstanding, highly reputable individuals to challenge the Wuhan origin. They believe that there's a 99.98% probability that it could have originated from there, but they're absolutely certain it did not originate in nature, and partly because the investigation by the World Health Organization was such a sham, and they called it out, not the media. Not a single member of the media called it out, the mainstream media. So what do we make of this? Are we being conned, lied to, manipulated? If that's the case, what is the ultimate motive? To unpack all these issues, we've invited Del Bigtree, B-I-G-T-R-E-E, from Austin, Texas. Del is one of the preeminent voices of the vaccine risk awareness movement. That does not mean that the people in the movement are anti-vaccine. These are not conspiratorial theorists. Rather, they are people who've taken the time to do what mainstream medicine, pediatricians, and others have not done. They study the actual peer-reviewed science to see if there is truth or contradiction. He is the founder, CEO of the nonprofit Informed Consent Action Network, or ICAN. That's a global network that investigates drug and vaccine fraud. The organization has already won several lawsuits against U.S. governmental agencies, in the Health and Human Services, National Institutes of Health, the CDC, and the FDA. Have you seen any of that in any of the mainstream media headlines? No. Earlier, Del's career as an Emmy-winning producer of the CBS talk show The Doctors changed profoundly after he produced the documentary about Dr. William Thompson's Vaxxed, From Cover-Up to Catastrophe, which greatly contributed to increasing public awareness against pharmaceutical tyranny. Del's current internet news show, The High Wire, is a fast-growing program in the natural health arena with over 75 million views. But Del is probably best known for his powerful speeches that weave shocking truth, searing wit, and dynamic passion into an experience that is often described as electrifying. The Higher Wire can be heard at BitChute, Rumble, and other alternative video sites that do not censor. Nice to have you with us today, Del.
It's a pleasure to be here, Gary. Thank you.
Del, we're going to begin our program with a discussion that I had with a journalist, Rosemary Fry. And she was asked to come on the program to discuss what was the science supporting the variants, for example, the degree to which they could be easily spread and how lethal were they compared to the current COVID-19. And that's the primary reason. In fact, she was told, our producer, she was not aware of Dr. Vandenbos's attack against the World Health Organization asking for the halt of all vaccines until some studies were done proving that there would not be some kind of viral escape. Now, what is of interest was that when I read some of his comments and put it in the context that these were hypotheses and that he risked his reputation, that if he was wrong, his reputation would be just attacked immediately. He would be destroyed. You do not go after the World Health Organization and Anthony Fauci and all the vaccine makers without a very swift and frequently completely devastating blowback. So at the very least, I felt that we should see what he was saying in any open and honest form. That's what you do. You bring people together. You have people with different hypotheses or theories, something that's not yet proven, and you ask, what is your qualification to give us your insights? We shared his qualification. He has a rather formidable reputation, a good reputation, we might add, in the vaccine research field. He's worked with the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, Gavi, the World Health Organization, and he was also a teacher for over 36 years. And he has a doctorate in veterinary medicine, but he also has a PhD in virology. So as far as we were concerned, he met enough of a legitimate criteria to invite him on, or at least read his work, and then just pose a question. It will take time for us to know the truth. But should we exercise a precautionary principle, meaning, what if he's right? What if against all odds that he got it right, and everyone else in the vaccine field got it wrong? And as an example of this possibility, I used a real-life example of how, when AZT was being promoted at the very beginning, there was a debate at New York University Medical School, and I was the only one of the attendees in the debate. The rest were medical doctors. They all supported AZT. I did not. And I did my homework and found out that it was an extraordinarily toxic drug. So toxic, it wouldn't even be allowed to be used on terminal cancer patients. And yet this would be the drug that people would be expected to take every day for the rest of their life. It's 1,600 milligrams, an astronomical dose. So high that if any doctor today gave 1,600 milligrams a day to a patient, they'd lose their license. So that was a precautionary principle. It turned out I was right. A lot of asymptomatic HIV-positive people would later go on the drug. There was enormous pressure within the AIDS community, take the drug, put time on your side. But it didn't. Tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, ultimately died. Yet at the same time, I was doing non-toxic natural approaches with a medical group, about 22 members of a medical team, board-certified physicians and nurses, at the Tri-State Healing Center. And also, I was a senior research fellow at the Institute of Applied Biology and had the anti-aging department. But they knew I was getting good results, so we put, at their request, these are very orthodox scientists, mainly in cancer research, so we took a group of 10 patients who agreed to participate in this experiment, and they gave them my protocol. In 4 years, every single one was HIV negative and completely healthy. 1,200 people at the Institute over 15 years were HIV positive because they didn't take the advanced protocol, but they were completely healthy. Not one died. We did everything possible to share this information, press conferences, all-day teaching seminars, articles, documentaries, nothing. The media wouldn't touch it. The AIDS community would not touch it. And then I started thinking, who was the head of that whole program of AIDS? That was Anthony Fauci. Who was the head of COVID? Anthony Fauci. The very mistakes made that caused, I consider personally, at least 300,000 lives, because not allowing natural, non-toxic approaches, better understanding how to keep the profiteering and politics out of AIDS, the very same thing is happening now with COVID. So anyhow, we had the interview. I read this, and then she came on, and she immediately attacked Van den Bosch. Okay. She made her points. She felt that he was unqualified. He didn't know what he was talking about, etc. That's fine. That's her opinion. And we allow people to, you know, have their opinion. Don't censor him. But then when I started asking her, would she go to the issue of the variants, nothing. Went right back. Again, I asked her. She went right back. There's a point in interviewing, as you know, as a producer, that if someone has made a point once and made it well, they don't have to make it 2, 3, or more times. You go on to other issues. She refused to, and so finally I just did something I've never done. I said, I'll give you the remainder of the program, uninterrupted by me, to make any statements you want. And that's when she just hung up. And that's when she also mentioned you. And that's why we're inviting you on this program, because we want you to have a chance to explain yourself. There are others she attacked also, and you'll have your opportunity to respond. Well, let's go now to the clip of the interview so you can hear exactly what was said. Now let's go over and say hello to our guest who is standing by, who will go a little further on this with us and explain some of the issues that I have not yet discussed. And I gave you her background a little earlier, and now let's see if we have her on the line. I'm not
Hello.
Sure if we do. Oh, hi.
Okay. How are you?
Hi, Rosemary. I gave you your bio a little earlier. Sure. Rosemary, I'm going to turn this over to you. What are we to make about the new strains that we are being told are more transmissible and possibly, but not yet provenly, more virulent? You reviewed some of the main studies that these fears are based upon. So what do these studies state? And then compare that with what the medical handlers, the pandemic, such as our national health officials and the mainstream media are telling us these strains mean as threats to us. The forum is yours.
How long are we going? Am I going to be on? Do we go till one or?
15 minutes.
Okay, because I'd like to actually just go right, if I may, go to the Gert van den Bosch material, then we'll go back to the new variants. I'm afraid that anybody who gives van den Bosch, that's how you pronounce his name, Gert van den Bosch, my mom's Dutch, so I know how to pronounce it, give him any credence is misled. I mean, how could we think that somebody who's affiliated with the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and with Gavi and with pharma companies, all of a sudden has changed his spots and he's saying, oh no, they're all wrong in everything they're doing. But yet he's saying, oh, we need mass vaccination. That should give anybody pause right there. So I'm gobsmacked that the likes that Del Bigtree would say, well, this is very important, or that yourself, Gary, just read what he says. He says, for example, right up top, that he's pro-vaccine. Second, I can assure you that each of the current vaccines that have been designed, developed, and manufactured by brilliant and competent scientists. So he's saying, you know, these are very good people making the vaccines. Whereas we know there's so much evidence, Gary, that these vaccines don't do anything, and yet they cause a lot of harm. So how can he say these are, you know, these are good people? He's very pro-vaccine. And then he says, I mean, his errors are right from the top, and he's just showing his cards and somehow fooling smart people. He says that antibodies, for example, are part of the innate immune system. We have these early on antibodies that aren't very proficient. You can look very quickly online to look at antibodies. They're not part of the innate immune system. I'm not an immunologist. You don't need to be. They're part of the adaptive immune system. They are produced in response to pathogens. And he says that these antibodies are very specific and that causes this whole cascade of this immune escape. If people read my article, you can find on my website, rosemaryfrey.ca. I wrote a piece.
Okay, Rosemary, you've made your point on that, which is fine. But understand something. Everything you said, I made highlight. We highlighted the fact he is a pro-vaccine, sits at the table as one of them, has his own vaccine company, and that is not what's at issue. The fact that he's with all these other companies, that is stated. But what I'm saying is it's a hypothesis. It has not been proven. That's why you are here to show what part of the variants are dangerous or not, and what does the actual scientific literature show.
To talk about what he said in his open letter and say we need to give it some credence. But the fact is there's no basis to give him credence because he's saying that antibodies are part of the innate immune system, and he wants to mass vaccinate people. And he gives zero references to back any of it up. We should give zero credence to this. You said we should
understand.
Give it serious consideration, but look at, we shouldn't give, tell
can,
people to give serious
consideration. No, hold on. No, that's not what I said. Please don't try to put words in my mouth. All right? You've been invited on here to offer an insight into the potential transmissibility, the viral load of some of these new variants. How dangerous are they?
the issue at hand, I was told we were going to talk about Van den Bosch's open letter. I've told you there's zero reason to give any credence. How would you give credence to anything that has zero references? You can't check anything. And if one does even look at anything he says that antibodies are part of the innate immune system, and he wants people to believe that he's turning his
back. What I'm going to do is this. You seem not to be interested in answering my questions, so I'm going to give you uninterrupted to say whatever you want for the rest of the show. All right?
Okay, goodbye. Thanks. Bye-bye.
That kind of interview is non-productive. And she was given the opportunity. Now, Del Bigtree, since your name was mentioned as being an irresponsible person, not doing your homework, not doing any fact-checking, and this should have been censored, then she's advocating, from my perspective and my personal belief system, she's advocating censorship for those who have a different point of view. I didn't read anything where he said he wants people to purchase his vaccine. I haven't seen any of that. In fact, I've seen no evidence to date that he actually has completed a vaccine to market. He is putting out a call that what if, and my suggestion is, at the very least, we should entertain the idea, since we have so many unknowns about this vaccine, and since so many people are getting side effects or dying from it in Europe, in the United States, and since we've had so much misinformation, the very least we should do is allow someone who is now becoming a whistleblower. And by the way, think of all the whistleblowers who were once a part of every industry, and now they've come forward with some truth. Shouldn't we allow those individuals a forum to share their points of view and the evidence they have supporting it? The forum is yours.
Thank you, Gary. This is in some ways, it's an unfortunate situation. Now, I don't know Rosemary Frey's work, but I gather that she tends to be, I would say on my side of the perspective of pharmaceutical or vaccines. But in this case, she, really attacked me and others that had presented Van den Bosch's plea to stop the use of every one of the COVID-19 vaccines immediately. I mean, that was his plea. And he's doubled, tripled down on videos, brilliant 2-minute video demanding that the WHO entertain and have a public forum. He is demanding a public forum of the best scientists in the world to discuss what he believes could be a catastrophic error with this vaccine program. And so right there for me, when you do the work that I do, my career really starts in this vaccine arena with two whistleblowers, really. I'm a producer at the CBS talk show, The Doctors. I get tipped off while I'm there. I mean, obviously a pro-vaccine show that I'm working on, but I wasn't afraid of controversial stories. And this was what was my specialty at The Doctors, with 7 producers. I did more of those stories challenging Monsanto's glyphosate and things like that. But one of, I get tipped off that there's a whistleblower inside of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention named Dr. William Thompson. I'm not allowed to tell that story in mainstream television. I go to my executive producers. They say, we're not going anywhere near that story. We're not going to piss off our sponsors, which are, obviously pharma sponsors. We're doing in commercials and, flu shot stuff. And I mean, that's what the show does. So I start pursuing that story anyway. I'm curious about it. And through an outrageous set of circumstances or miracles, however you want to look at it, I end up meeting Dr. Andy Wakefield, maybe the original or one of the big whistleblowers in the vaccine movement. Some call him the father of the anti-vax movement, or wherever you're at, he is a huge figure. Every time vaccines are brought up in mainstream media, Andy Wakefield's name comes within 1 or 2 sentences. That, that doctor who was debunked in England. So I meet him, and he's already working on a documentary about Dr. William Thompson, the whistleblower at the CDC. So I have, my career around this discussion starts with whistleblowers. Now, one thing to be clear is that Dr. William Thompson, who's still at the CDC, for the people that haven't seen Vax, very quickly, he came forward and said they were committing scientific fraud on the vaccine safety studies being done at the CDC, and specifically a study looking at the MMR vaccine in autism, measles, mumps, rubella vaccine in autism. Now, our film that I ended up making with Andy was based on 4 hours of interviews with Dr. William Thompson, essentially his confession over how the fraud took place, who was involved in it, why they made the decisions they did. But essentially, they kicked half of the kids off of the study in the middle of the study to change the data. They were seeing a strong correlation between the delivery of the MMR vaccine and autism, and specifically when you got it. If you got the MMR earlier, you were more likely to develop autism, early being 12 to 18 months, versus if you'd waited till after 3 years old. Now, Dr. William Thompson states unequivocally in all of those confessions and recordings that he's pro-vaccine, that he believes vaccines are, you know, the greatest invention of all times, but and says that, you know, this study maybe didn't prove that vaccines do cause autism, but that the study was filled with so much connection and an obvious increase, at least in the children they were looking at, that it demanded another study, a more thorough study, be done immediately. That never happened. Instead, they changed the data, manipulated it to tell the world that the vaccine, that the study had proved that the vaccine doesn't cause autism, the exact opposite of what it was actually showing. So that's my entry into this space. And then I, in order to even decide to work with Andy Wakefield, you know, I think arguably one of the most controversial, you know, subjects or people in this discussion. I looked at Andy's career. What happened with him? What happened when he was this gastroenterologist scientist who had published, you know, 170 peer-reviewed studies on the intestinal systems and Crohn's disease, and that's sort of what got him into this issue. And then, of course, if you know his story, he makes this connection in the famous Lancet study where they're studying 12 children. And it's not just Andy. It's 12 world-renowned scientists and gastroenterologists looking at these children whose parents, 8 out of the 12 kids involved, said, my child has this incredible gut disease, which is what this was all about for Andy. That was his specialty. But that disease started right after they were diagnosed with autism. And furthermore, their autism started right after they received the MMR vaccine. And so Andy, when you look at that moment, is, you know, you can go back and see him in, you know, on the radio or on television where he's being interviewed. And he keeps making a statement that he is pro-vaccine, he is not anti-vaccine, that he believed, and this was the statement he made, that, you know, I'm not advocating for the end of vaccination. What I'm advocating for is parents should use the single measles vaccine, the single rubella vaccine, and the single mumps vaccine, because it, you know, when he looked at it, that had far less, it had a much stronger safety review, had been through many more safety trials when they were separated out like that, and they hadn't seen this sort of autism issue at the same level, at least, as we were seeing complained about with the MMR. That was a statement. Just keep them separated. Well, what happened was the license for the separated vaccine suddenly disappears in the middle of all this, really 6 months later, and they make it so the MMR is the only vaccine available in England, and that leads this cascading effect where everyone that's heard Andy doesn't trust it anymore, and this drop in vaccinations, and he becomes this bad guy, loses his license, all of this takes place. So when I'm coming to this, you know, when I'm coming to this as a journalist,
Yes, Dale, you dropped out there.
With whistleblowers. Oh, can you hear me now?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. All right. So there's similarities to this. Also, very interestingly, with Andy, one of the arguments as they were trying to destroy his credibility was that he had another product that he was working on, another vaccine. Brian Deere was this journalist that was attacking Andy Wakefield, that he had another product that he was trying to just, you know, destroy the credibility of MMR so he could sell his own vaccine. Well, Andy wasn't working on a vaccine. He was working on a colostrum product, something based on what we see in breast milk to try and enhance the immune system. It wasn't a prophylactic like the vaccine, but to enhance the immune system of children who had autoimmune disease that couldn't be vaccinated. But that was misconstrued. And it was one of the factors that gave him an ulterior motive so that no, you know, that he had no credibility. And so all of this led to him losing his license. And so the moment I hear Vanden Bosch speak, there is, you know, first of all, a passion and a sincerity to what he was saying in the interview I was looking at that is familiar to me. I also want to say that I come from a background in theater. My father was a minister, but my parents were in New York. I grew up acting, doing plays, even in my father's church. And then I went on to do some time, you know, acting and then directing theater in earlier in my career. So I come from a background of understanding what a good performance is. Okay. And then that career turns into working for Dr. Phil. I'm just giving a background because when you're attacked by someone from like Rosemary saying, I did no research into this guy, there is a lot of things that make a person who they are. My journalistic career has a very interesting route. So I work for Dr. Phil. I'm interviewing. He taught us, I mean, for whatever anyone thinks, he taught us how to analyze whether we were getting true answers when we're out interviewing these families. You know, how do we know, how do we get them to tell the truth? Things like that. So between those things, when I watch a Vanden Bosch and I see a passion, when he starts talking about in the interview that I shared 2 weeks ago, when he starts talking about why he's doing this and the risk he's taking with his career, and the only reason he's so passionate about this is he's thinking about his children. When he starts talking about his children and the future of humanity, I am telling you as a professional, both as a journalist who has interviewed, not just done interviews, but did interviews for a psychologist named Dr. Phil. When I look back at a career of directing and understanding what a great performance takes, and knowing what scientists are like, either Vanden Bosch is giving, he's giving an Academy Award performance. I mean, what Rosemary is saying is that he is, it's a lie, that he is working for pharma, that he's perpetuating. I mean, it's a gigantic conspiracy theory that she's putting out there, that there's this concerted effort to have this man come forward, that he's actually backed by Bill and Melinda Gates, he's backed by Gavi, and that the pharmaceutical industry is putting him out there as, I guess, some sort of ruse to distract all of us that are worried about this vaccine. So first of all, for someone, she's saying that I and the people that are sharing this video have done no background checks on him, and she can't understand why we would trust him. And I'm thinking, I'd like some evidence to your point. Where is your evidence other than the fact that he states up front, he's clear right up front, I am pro-vaccine. I love vaccines. I love vaccine makers. I've been working on my own natural killer cell vaccines. You know, we aren't there yet. But, I mean, it's not like he hid it and she uncovered it. The man states it up front, as you did when you brought up the conversation yourself, saying he, you know, it's clear this is where he comes from. So, number one, he's not hiding anything. Number two, his passion and the way he's delivering it is just, to me, everything that I study in humanity and my background tells me this man is telling the truth. But then, you know, when we look at a whistleblower, I mean, I want to say that it's not wrong for a journalist like Rosemary to question his integrity, to question, to do a, you know, to do an investigation into what are this man's motives. I have no problem with that. But you need, if you were going to say the things that she's saying, that he has zero credibility, that he has doesn't have the correct background or scientific background to even make the statements he's making. I mean, where are her credentials to make those statements? And what is she backing up simply because he's a pro-vaccine person? We shouldn't listen to him. And that's my problem with her attack. She is saying that he's giving no evidence. Well, where is her evidence that she calls him an astroturf, that this is an astroturf situation apparently designed by the overlords of pharma and that people like me and you, Gary, are in, you know, just being either we're suckers or we're a part of this astroturf to confuse the world, or I don't understand. Okay. I mean, they're right. Big statements, but they should be backed with some proof.
Dale.
Yes.
I look at it from a little different point of view.
Okay.
When everyone was promoting Plandemic, and it opens with Dr. Judy in there and talking about how great her career was, we simply asked her a series of questions. You know, if you say that you were there with the HIV virus, can you show us any papers you published? And can you show us where you're the author or one of the lead authors? And by the way, just to get it clear, because later this was an out-and-out inaccurate statement she made. Oh, you know, she was the last author, but that's how, you know, that's the most important author. Point of fact, publishing in peer-reviewed journals as I have, you know, it's the first author, the second author. That's how it works. But she never answered our questions. And therefore, after we gave her three opportunities to come forward with legitimate questions and answer them, she didn't. Then we no longer consider her a credible person. Now, that doesn't mean that she's stupid or doesn't know something or hasn't worked in the field. But outside of that controversy, she was virtually obscure. No one I knew ever heard of her. Same way with this person. I never heard of him. But we've written him. We've written him. We've emailed him. We've left messages. We'd like to know the following. Do you have a vaccine currently in production or about to go into production that you will be championing against the other vaccines? That would show a conflict of interest, and it would show a hidden agenda. But we have no proof of that. Also, we ask him questions about immunology and would he respond to his background in immunology. And why at this time is he doing this and has not done it earlier? So we ask him a lot of legitimate questions. Now, we hope that he will respond to us. But in the interim, there's a larger story. And here's the larger story. And let us not forget it. In fact, unfortunately, Dale, sorry to tell you, but you're not on the list. Quote, the report accuses Robert Kennedy Jr., who was banned from Instagram last month, Joseph Mercola, Ty and Charlene Bollinger, whose Twitter accounts were briefly suspended at the beginning of the pandemic, Sherry Tenpenny, Riza Islam, Rashid Batar, Aaron Elizabeth, Sarah G., Kelly Brogan, Christine Northup, Ben Tapper, and Kevin Jenkins of spreading disinformation and claims that their social media accounts, quote, have repeatedly violated Facebook and Twitter terms of service agreements. And she's saying, or this author is saying, these are the people who are giving all the misinformation about vaccines, or these are the 12 most prominent ones. And that's interesting because I've written more articles than anyone else with Richard Gale, 54 articles. The last three just in the last 2 weeks about Johnson & Johnson, Pfizer, and Moderna. But they're saying that this is all misinformation, that everyone who challenges vaccines is spreading misinformation, is, quote, is threatening public health efforts to inoculate Americans against the virus. Our new report from the Center for Countering Digital Hate and the Center Anti-Vax Watch found that most of the anti-vaccine content circulating online can be tied to 12 people. Okay. Now, does that mean that all these 12 people are anti-vax? None of them are. Does it mean that the information has been found to be wrong by peer review science? I've yet to see any of it. Is it that these new groups popping up, which are actual astroturf groups, many of them supported by special interests, including the pharmaceutical industry, and they've been doing this for a long time, and Robert Kennedy Jr. has brought this out, where in lawsuits they have discovered that there was character assassination squads hired by pharmaceutical companies, including the largest makers of the vaccines, to destroy the reputation of any person, doctor, scientist, journalist, activist. So on the one hand, the New York Times, the Washington Post, CNN, all the major media, including some alternative media, are supporting, get your vaccines, get them quickly, we're going to run out. And that's in the whole panic is on, are you going to get your vaccines? Just like, are you getting your test? You got to get your test. Not being told that the test is a fraudulent test. I know because I'm the one who filmed 1996, Dr. Curry Mullis, who won the Nobel Prize in chemistry in 1993 for discovering the PCR. And he said it's not to be used for diagnosing. We're using it for diagnosing. So everything they've told us can be proven and is by mainstream scientists and physicians to be wrong. We don't need anyone from the alternative field to say this. And now they're going after them. Just Dr. Cahill, Professor Cahill, over in Ireland, lost her position because she led a protest this past week. And her students, get this, her students demanded that she be fired. So she's gone. One after the other, they're just destroying anyone who, no matter how much truth they have, and yet the media will not take a second and ask all these groups that are wanting to filter information to have a truth czar. Do they even think of the consequences that there's one agency controlled by your mainstream Google platforms like Google, Facebook, Twitter, etc., and the governmental agencies like the deep state agencies that would control every single thing given to us? And if you dared write something like Matt Taibbi or Glenn Greenwald or Chris Hedges or Abby Martin or Max Blumenthal, if you wrote the truth, we just don't want you slandered, libeled, and destroyed. We want you punished. So then will we get to a point in the next year where we can't even speak the truth, no matter how irrefutable the evidence is? Well, that's where we're at right now. And that's why I believe that we have to pull back and look at the larger issues concerning vaccines, and especially COVID, now that we're getting a lot of the new information. And it's devastating how much new information is coming out that we have not been told before, and the lies. And these are the same people who have a whole history of lying and have paid penalties into the billions of dollars for it, and yet everybody simply sanitizes Pfizer and Johnson & Johnson's background, fetid, as morbid as it is, as if today the vaccine is all pure, all good, all great, and line up and get it. And if you dare attack it or question it, then you're the enemy and you should be labeled as a domestic terrorist. Take us on that journey of where you're at in that place and what you're seeing from your perspective.
Well, I think I'm a little different than some of the people mentioned, whereas I am a media entity and I run my show, The High Wire, at thehighwire.com. I run it exactly like I learned how to do journalism for CBS and the doctors. I brought in my executive producer, I brought over from the doctor's television show, and one of my field producers came from that show. So we sort of living a dream, which is to produce television at the same quality level we learned to deliver it, but with one change: that we have no sponsors that we answer to. We are a nonprofit. So we said, can you imagine if we took our talent and did what we do without having executive producers or sponsors that dictate what we can and cannot talk about, that we can investigate whatever we're interested in. We also are completely transparent about how we deliver our information. So unlike any show that I know, certainly on television, anyone that signs our newsletter at our website, we do a show every Thursday. On Monday, we send out to everyone on our newsletter a link to every peer-reviewed study that we referenced, all of our articles, where our stories came from and how we told it, so that people can do their own investigation, which is the number one thing that I'm trying to get people to understand. I don't want you to just, stop trusting CNN and MSNBC or Fox, don't hand your brain over anymore. You got to think for yourself. But I don't want them coming to me and just trusting what I say too. Then we're not moving. I want a population of people that get back to caring enough to do their own investigation and to start opening up their own intuition when they hear something that doesn't sound right. I want to show you how you can investigate that yourself. So I come to it that. But what also makes me different from some of the other people mentioned is there's a legal arm to my nonprofit, which means we are suing for information when it's being upheld, especially by government agencies. So we now have a relationship with the FDA and the CDC that people don't see. I don't talk about it all the time. If you're getting our newsletter, you're getting our updates on FOIA requests that are going on, things that, are advancing. And so anyone that tries to say that what I'm saying is misinformation, they are lying. That there is we back up. I am so sure to make sure that what we put out, we can back up with actual science. And I know that's true about all the other people on that list, but what is different about us is that we actually have a background that when people lie about us or they're lying to us, we sue. We're using legal methods, which puts us into a different category. And I think we're looked at a little bit differently. The FDA and Tony Fauci, if they actually come at us, they know that we would love for them to slander us, that we could get ourselves in a courtroom and start getting discovery on some of these things. So all of that sort of changes the way I see this. Now, is it true that censorship is, we are living in a time that I never dreamed would be like this? We all know it. It's like a science fiction movie. I've lost my YouTube channel, at least for the High Wire. It has, you know, where I started my show was on Facebook. We no longer have a Facebook page. That was taken away from us. YouTube is taken away. Instagram has been taken away. Twitter is threatening us. And so the space where I built my audience around the High Wire, and you know, I was thankful that these technologies were there, is now gone. Now, luckily, we saw it coming. We moved everybody over. We started fortifying our website, thehighwire.com, so that people could find the information. But these are scary times. There, we now know that the President of the United States has just allocated over $1 billion for propaganda, essentially, to combat vaccine hesitancy. We have never seen anything like what is taking place with this COVID-19 vaccine. This is an experimental product. It is an experiment. It is not FDA approved. I don't understand how, you know, how anyone in medicine, anyone in science, or how a president of the United States can be, you know, boldly stating that everyone in his country and the WHO and these people, everyone in the world should take a vaccine that has not been through a safety trial. And we watch Tony Fauci reference past histories of the safety of vaccines, even if that was true, which is the work I've done and you've done has proven that that's not even true. We've never been able to really get the public to understand how dangerous the vaccines we're already giving our children are. But that's a different story. Some, you know, those have their safety studies and, you know, that's a different conversation. But what people are watching now, this hasn't been a safety study. We're in a phase 3 trial that is supposed to be multiple years long, at least 2 years long. And about 14 days after the second shot in these trials, they're submitting for emergency use authorization, basically a right to try. And so when I looked at that, and then you look at the animal trials of these products, and they're horrific. They had diabolical results in virtually every animal trial that's ever been done on any of these vaccines. So it was a failure in animal trials, destroyed the lives of animals, made them sick, made them die. And then we warp speed out of that into human beings with, and then don't carry those studies long enough. This technology, all of them, whether it's viral vector, which is AstraZeneca and Johnson & Johnson, or it's the mRNA by Moderna or Pfizer, these technologies are brand new. They have never been injected into human beings as supposed vaccines. And we could argue the semantics on calling them vaccines. So all of these things I've been reporting, and you've probably been reporting, but for a year, the known dangers of what happened to the animals in these animal trials, the known dangers around mRNA technologies, the known dangers around viral vector vaccines and their attempt to use those for HIV and found out that they were causing HIV or making people more susceptible to HIV infection. All of these things have already for a year have been focused on, you know, how dangerous this vaccine could be. There are so many different ways that this vaccine could wipe our species off the planet. Now, it's a hypothesis. It's a hypothesis that these are dangerous vaccines based on what we saw in the trials. So we know that there's it's not without evidence that they could be dangerous. There's evidence they could be dangerous. Now, are human beings different than animals? Sure. But does that mean I just assume that the animal trials were wrong and that human beings won't react the same way to these vaccines? No, we don't make assumptions, especially with antibody-dependent enhancement, which is my biggest concern, which essentially means the vaccine acts as a catalyst. The next time you come in contact with the virus, it helps the virus proliferate through your cells, cause cytokine storm, upper respiratory failure. This is what was seen in the animal trials. It was such a big problem that one of the developers of vaccines, Peter Hotez, went before our Congress last year and warned them, we can't rush this vaccine. We had this terrible issue of immune enhancement happening in the trials. So all of those things, when we know that this is a potential, and then there's great scientists like Dr. Michael Yeadon really is a whistleblower. This guy's a former vice president at Pfizer, who's obviously got one of the vaccines in this horse race, a top scientist for them. He came forward and said this vaccine is dangerous. He's worried about it stopping the ability to have babies, you know, pregnancy, issues with the placenta, you know. And so, again, he has a theory. But these theories are based in science. There's a credible reason. It's, you know, a theoretical possibility these vaccines could have this issue. And so that's why you do safety studies. It's this whole thing is so simple to me that I don't understand. And so there's a great article, actually. WebMD just interviewed me, and I felt like it was one of the more balanced, because I was talking to this reporter saying, I know this is supposed to be an attack piece on me. I said to her, I'm that bad guy, and no one in medicine should be listening to me. But are we actually living in a time where we have decided that we trust pharma so much? Does it matter that they pay out billions of dollars for lying about talcum powder that it had asbestos in it, for lying about Biox, for lying about OxyContin? I mean, the list goes on and on. These companies pay out billions of dollars for murdering people based on their lie about one specific thing, safety. They lie about safety. They cheat their safety trials all the time. But now all of a sudden, we have a brand new technology, and we're just going to trust that the science is there, even though it failed in the animal trials, even though they don't even know how the thing works inside of the human body. We're just going to trust that. And we want to live in a time where pharma no longer does safety trials, that there's no longer long-term safety trials to see what happens to the human body. Does it cause cancer down the road? Does it cause autoimmunity? Are we really saying that I am a bad guy for demanding that we have a multi-year safety trial before this is injected into innocent human beings, that we can't get it out of their body? We're talking about, and my point has been, and is that so far, in the existence of humanity, there has never been a bacteria or a virus that mutated naturally in a way that wiped the species off the planet. There's been some pretty bad plagues and moments, but it was never able to wipe us off the planet. But I believe a mistake by science, rushing the science, are two of the most dangerous words ever put into a sentence. And that's what they did. We warp-speeded bad science, science that was getting animals killed in animal trials. I see no change in the development from the horrific results they were getting in animal trials. I don't see some change. I just see taking that technology and rushing it right into people. And when I think about Bill Gates' dream to have everybody get this vaccine, when I hear Biden rushing to 100 million people vaccinated in the first 100 days and the whole country, enough vaccines for the whole country. And I think, can you imagine if this vaccine has one of the problems we saw in the animal trial, where everybody that gets it next year comes in contact with the virus and they drop dead? Then we just wiped out of our species all for an illness that has, at the very worst, a 0.4% death rate. 99.6% of people that are currently affected around the world is being described as a mild illness. And so when you think of taking on the risks, and then when you watch that everyone that is stating the things that I'm saying, and when we lose our Facebook page, we lose our YouTube page, it's because somehow we're spreading misinformation. What misinformation? I'm telling people that it's not FDA approved. Is that misinformation? No. Tony Fauci's putting out misinformation. Every time he's asked, is this approved by the FDA? He says, yes, the Moderna, the Johnson & Johnson, the Pfizer have been. And then he plays a word game. He'll end his sentence with, you know, got an emergency use authorization. You were asked, was it FDA approved? There's actually a great interview out there, ironically or shockingly, by a Mexican actor director named Eugenio Derbez, Eugenio, on his Instagram. They obviously wanted to promote the product to the Latin community. He has 15 million followers. And unlike Chris Cuomo or any of the other mainstream hacks that are basically work for pharma because that's who's funding these stations people are listening to. When you have a Mexican comedian decide to ask important questions and follow-up questions, you watch Fauci getting filleted wide open and shown to be the manipulator that he is. What do we do? Media, news is in America, it's the fourth branch of government. It's the fourth estate. All of our founding fathers said, if you lose a free media, not a purchased media, not an industry-funded media, but a free media, if you lose free media, free news that can ask whatever question it wants, can question the government, can question any industry it wants, that without that pressure, that social pressure that a cynical news media should have or a skeptical news media, if you lose that pressure upon government and upon industry, then you will lose your nation. That is what our founding fathers said. Yet we live in a time now where censorship is okay, where we have government officials, Congress, sitting in giant meetings and pressuring these social media companies to shut down anybody that speaks outside of the government's narrative. That's it. That right there goes against this is exactly what our founding fathers warned us about. And so I don't believe there should ever be censorship. I think that anybody's voice should be able to be heard. And people gravitate, and hopefully most people recognize when somebody's full of baloney. But when you see the work that I do, I can't speak for all bloggers. I can't. And I'm just as upset as anyone else that, someone like Rosemary, for instance, can put out a piece without any backing and can destroy someone's credibility without any facts. But she's allowed to do that. She still has the right to free speech. That's her platform. She can do that. I don't like it. I think there's a better way to do journalism. And on my show yesterday, I addressed the things that she said and said, I think there was a better way for you to handle this. But she has that right. We all have that right. We should have that right. When we live in a nation that starts going after anybody, essentially then this is Nazi Germany. Because that's what Hitler did. Anyone that wanted to come out and say, I have photographs, we have these concentration camps, we have people that are being burned alive, they just shut those people down. They shut that media down. They didn't let that information out of the country. They lied to the public. That's what's happening here. We have a private industry in pharma with a product that had a diabolical result in most of their animal trials. And we have a government that is shutting down anybody that questions the effectiveness of that product. And by the way, that's one of the, when you look at the guidelines for Facebook, anyone that questions the effectiveness of the vaccine should be immediately taken from Facebook and YouTube. Really? Because it's not effective, period. It's not this whole idea that it's 95% effective. It's effective at stopping the symptoms. And I would argue against that, but it doesn't matter. The point is, when everyone hears the word vaccine, when we hear the news agencies saying that the reason we need the vaccine is to get to herd immunity, I'm not going to give the full science class here. We know what that means. What it means is the vaccine stops your infection and it stops your ability to transmit to other people the same way that a natural infection always does, that we have a robust immune response. We'd never catch the virus again. Therefore, we protect everyone around us. The vaccine is so far, as we know, is 0% effective at doing that, which is what people equate to a vaccine. So there's a lie going on. They keep saying 95% effective, and they know that the public thinks that means 95% effective at stopping the infection. And this is what was why I got so passionate about Geert Vandenbosch. He is one of the first scientists, the level he's saying, stating that unequivocally. This vaccine does not stop infection, therefore it does not stop transmission, which makes it an incredibly dangerous situation. And the science that he's talking about exists. You know this, Gary. He's not coming out of left field. It's not like he came out and said, the vaccine causes leprosy or something. There's no history of that. He's talking about pressuring a virus with a product that is having a suboptimal response under the circumstances. We know that science is true. We know that exists. We've seen it. That's basically what you're doing okay. in laboratories and gain-of-function laboratories.
Del, unfortunately, we're out of time. You've made a lot of statements. I appreciate you being out there. Keep up the good work. And also, I hope Rosemary keeps up her work. There's nothing wrong with debate. There's nothing wrong with differences of opinion. It's just that we all have to realize, let us all have an opportunity to exercise the precautionary principle. That, to me, is what that Bosch was doing, saying this could be happening. And I'm saying, let us look through that argument before we dismiss it or anyone who supports his right to that hypothesis. Del Bigtree, you can watch him over at his Highwire channel. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening, and have a nice day.
Mother, mother, there's too many of you crying. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying.